You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. 2 years ago, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a law meant to protect children on social media. It was supposed to go into effect last month, but it was put on hold after the law's merits were challenged. And last week, a major ruling in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals may strike down portions of the law. This decision could reshape the way social media companies handle children's privacy and safety online. To help us break down what this means for kids, parents, tech companies, and free speech, we're joined now by Leslie Gilo Jacobs, Anthony Kennedy Professor of Law at the McGeorge School of Law. And just a note, the McGeorge School of Law is a financial supporter of Cap Radio. Professor Jacobs, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too.
Let's talk about what this bill does. AB 2273 was intended to protect children using social media. What does the law do and what makes it controversial?
The law does a number of different things. And so what it talks about is it talks about protecting the design of the features that kids can access, and then also data protection, the collection of data and the use of data. To that extent, it looks like it's a law aimed at design and privacy. What makes the law controversial and ultimately problematic, and here we're talking about one provision of the law, is that it goes beyond regulating privacy, and it requires private corporations to look at the message of speech that they might be publishing and to decide whether it's harmful and change what they present because of that. And so that's the big free speech problem that both courts, the district court and the court of appeals, found.
And who was suing to block the law from going into effect? And what can you tell us about them and what were their arguments?
Sure, I'll tell you, it's NetChoice. And NetChoice, it represents a bunch of the big social media groups and Meta, Google, Netflix, others. Now, it represents other smaller internet, people who publish on the internet as well. And they have brought a lot of cases across the United States as states are passing laws trying to regulate social media and the internet generally. And so they've been successful in a fair number of them, and other ones not so much. And here I want to point out with this law, as I said, there is one key provision that the Court of Appeal said is likely unconstitutional. This was on a preliminary order. We don't have a final judgment. But importantly, I think, too, is that the Court of Appeals did not uphold the order that the district court issued. The district court said the whole entire law is likely unconstitutional, and so I'm going to put it all on hold. And the Court of Appeals was more discerning, choosing the one provision to say, no, this is the big free speech problem, looking at the meaning of speech and saying what you like and don't like, and the government making the sites do that. But the other provisions, it lifted the order and said, sent it back to the district court and said, you know, these things could be okay. And so you need to look more carefully at these and decide whether they're doing this unconstitutional speech regulation thing or whether they are permissible privacy data regulations.
Let's hone in on what the Ninth Circuit took issue with. What actually made it unconstitutional? Can you help walk us through this free speech and compelled speech argument?
Sure. A key provision of the act said that what businesses need to do if their features that they have are likely to be accessed by children, children are defined as 18 years or younger, what they need to do is assess the risk of a material detriment or harm to kids from, and it says the data management practices that they're using, but then it has a series of definitions, and those include whether their features will ultimately lead to exposing children to harmful or potentially harmful content. And so the problem with this is that the government's not allowed to pick and choose the content of speech. That's the rule of the free speech clause. Now, here the government's not doing it. It's saying private businesses who are on the internet, you folks do it. But as had been obvious even before the last Supreme Court term, but the Supreme Court validated this concept in a case brought by NetChoice, even the huge social media giants have the same free speech rights that you and I do. So just like the government can't tell us, oh, you have to say this or not say that, or by the way, don't say anything harmful to children. The same thing's true under the free speech clause for these big companies. And that's why the court said it was likely unconstitutional that the way the court put it, the government here, California legislature, was deputizing these private businesses to censor speech. And here we're talking about censoring speech according to what it means. You know, do you have to listen to the speech and understand what it means? That's the key bad thing under the Constitution, right? If you're just saying, oh, we're going to take some information, or we're going to tell you if we're taking your information, we're going to get your consent about it, we're going to clearly inform you about what our practices are, those are different sorts of things that are more likely okay. The problem here was requiring these private businesses to look at the meaning of speech and take action because of it.
I mean, was this asking the social media companies to police themselves or censor themselves? And if so, is that a smart way in law to go about it? Could the same ends have been achieved through a different area of law?
Well, it's not a smart way to go about it because the Constitution says you can't. And so are there other ways to go about achieving what they want to achieve here, which is protecting kids from harmful content? Yes, there are. I'm going to say they're probably not as good as being able to directly limit the harmful content. But, you know, things like incentivizing the companies to do it themselves, which, by the way, that's the irony here, which is because these big social media companies are private speakers, you know, not only can't the government regulate them, but, you know, they've got their own right to have their rules about content and to enforce them. And so, you know, the government can incentivize them to have child protective content, but they can't command them to do it or educate the parents or use the criminal laws. But, you know, the problem I think we see with all of these laws, and I want to be sympathetic to the legislatures trying to pass them, is that they're a two-edged sword of the internet, right? That is, one thing is it's all this information out there. Isn't that great? Look at the access we can all have to it, all the things we can learn, the research we can do, the opinions we can, you know, consider. That's all great. But we also know about all the difficult things and the problems that happen because of the speech on the internet. Not only, you know, this is harm to children, which they're probably talking about things like studies talking about social media and perhaps, you know, depression that kids are experiencing. But there's misinformation on the internet that's causing all sorts of public health problems. And what do you do about that? The problem is we have a constitution that says the government just can't do anything about it. It's up to these private companies to decide what they're going to do. And not only that, these private companies also have a statute that Congress wrote that protects them in their decisions about putting speech on or taking it off, and they're not liable for the speech, you know, when they do that. So they have a lot of protection in law for their decisions, and I can understand why lawmakers want more control. It's just difficult with the, particularly the United States Constitution. The genesis of this was a law in the United Kingdom, and it is difficult to take laws from Europe or the United Kingdom and try to transpose them into the United States because more speech regulation is okay under their constitutions and treaties, the way they interpret them in Europe and the United Kingdom and other countries too, than in the United States. The United States Constitution, the way the Supreme Court interprets it, is really, really protective of individual speech rights. And that means even big social media speech rights.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Professor Leslie Gilo Jacobs from the McGeorge School of Law about the latest court ruling on California's 2022 social media law. And Professor Jacobs, I appreciate you zooming out a bit. And I'm curious, why have lawmakers at both the federal and the state level had such a tough time regulating social media? What is it about the laws already on the books that make this such a challenging, thorny regulatory landscape?
Well, the Free Speech Clause of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, which applies to federal lawmakers and state lawmakers. And we've talked about what the problem with that, maybe a problem for lawmakers. Now, again, it's protecting free speech. But the point being that often what the lawmakers are concerned about, that is the harms they're trying to get after, have to do with the meaning of the speech. Right. You've got this public health information going out and it's, you know, they think it's flat out false and it's convincing people, you know, not to get vaccines or not to wear masks or not to do various other different things. Or the social media sites have information that is, you know, causing kids to feel bad about themselves. And it's also distracting them. But again, why are they distracted? Because they're so interested in what's on there. So that's the free speech clause of the United States Constitution. I was mentioning the law, Section 230 of what was called the Communications Decency Act, which is just an interesting law because Congress passed it a couple of decades ago when it had no idea what was going to happen with the internet. And so the whole point was to open up the internet and to make it so that people who publish things on the internet, or published in particular things that other people posted, wouldn't be liable for those postings, because if they were concerned about always being sued for them, like maybe they say something defamatory or you otherwise are violating either a civil law or a criminal law, that suddenly they would get sued for it. And so the law said, no, you're not going to be sued for it. You're immune so long as you're just publishing the speech of other people. And besides that, we're going to, here's a deputize again, but we're going to deputize you as Good Samaritans and say that you're also not liable for having community standards and kicking off people or censoring speech that you think is inappropriate. And so the companies here, it's not just the big social media companies, it's anybody. It can be a small person on their own little blog if they're letting on everybody, you know, people who are publishing their own stuff. Everybody can't be sued for what the other person says. And the idea was, let's have a free and open internet. And wow, you know, it certainly is a free and open internet. But the problem, Congress has all sorts of bills every term where it's thinking about amendments and, you know, people want to amend it this way or that way. Here's the harm that we want to address. And it may be different depending upon, you know, political party. But all of them run into the problem of you know, threading this needle between regulating just the way that the design, for example, and of the sites versus regulating what the meaning of what these folks are publishing. And so it's a very, very difficult thing to do.
Have any of these bills worked out in regulating or restricting social media at the state or federal level? What successful legislation we have, and why was that different?
Well, sure. We have the California Consumer Privacy Act, which actually one would say has had a big impact on consumer privacy, because California led the way in having the statute, and it is still active. There are new regulations that were issued under it. And so what does it do? It is a privacy protection. And so, in fact, the Ninth Circuit contrasts that law to this law, the more recent law, saying that privacy laws are going to be okay if what you're mainly regulating is the collection of data, informing consumers about the collection of data and getting their consent to the collection or not consent. And then you can also require the sites to report about how many people have asked to be, you know, not have their data collected and things like that, because all those things are simply collecting facts and they're having to do with the privacy of persons' information and giving people, individuals, control over their own information, as opposed to, once again, telling the sites what messages they're allowed to send.
Didn't AB 2273, the bill we're talking about, didn't that touch on dark patterns too? Which help me understand this concept, which people may not be familiar with the lingo, but isn't it if you're just trying to unsubscribe from an app? A lot of us have had that experience when we're just trying to cancel a subscription and we can't figure out how to do it.
Exactly. Actually, I just had that problem. But in any event, yes. And I will say that the California Consumer Privacy Act already talks about dark patterns to a certain extent. But this act has it in it as well, talking about you can't use dark patterns to try to get kids to give their information. And so that's an example here. There's dark patterns, there's age verification, there's a clarity provision. You have to clearly state what your policies are. You have to inform kids about if they're being tracked. Various different things like that. Again, they don't have to do with a message. They have to do with the way, the design about how things are being presented. What's particularly interesting about the dark patterns is that it's on the line, because dark patterns, indeed, as you said, when you can't cancel, or also the nudging or shaming, you know, do you really want to opt out of this? Don't you really want to? That is a message, but at the same time, it's a device, and one that, one could say at a certain point is overcoming the thinking process of people and trying to get them to act in certain ways that doesn't involve processing a message and reacting to it. And so to the extent that a law can segregate those out and say you're not allowed to use these tricky, deceptive mechanisms in order to talk to people, then that can potentially be okay. And that's going back down to the district court to review.
So that's still in the courts, because I personally just tried to get rid of an app. I won't say which one. And we were searching all over online to figure out just how to get out of it. Is that also a thorny area of law, or do you feel like that one's going to be figured out?
I think it will be figured out. Yeah, I had to send an email and I haven't gotten a response back yet about whether they're really going to cancel me. But yeah, but these are the types of things that they're not talking about messages as much, although it is, you have to understand it to be able to apply the dark pattern thing, at least to some of them. Other ones you don't. I compare dark patterns also to way back when people were concerned about subliminal messaging. You'd be looking at an ad and they'd have a nice speech, and then underneath somehow it's sending a message to your brain that says, buy this product. Now, something like that is just it's something that the government should be able to regulate. And I think even under the free speech clause, because it is it's tricking your consciousness. And so with the dark patterns, I do think that it may get down to courts having to look at what dark patterns are you talking about, right? And are they actually tricky and like fraud? And if they are, then that is something that governments can regulate. Age verification is tough too. I mean, the concept of it is a good thing. What's tough is trying to age verify online because it requires, it's difficult to do. And so the court has held in other contexts, even on the internet, that age verification is unconstitutional because it will make it much more difficult for adults be able to access content that they could otherwise access. So it's tricky trying to do age verification.
So in our last minute here, let's talk about what comes next for California's social media law. What components are unaffected and good to be law, and what are the next steps for those that are contested?
Okay, well, I'd say that the one that the circuit court said is likely unconstitutional, that's over. Even though it was a likely unconstitutional, it was quite clear what the circuit court said, that this, there are big problems with it. That's not going to work. That one's out. But it lifted the order as to all the other provisions I was just talking about. There's an age verification. There's the dark patterns. There's clearly stating your privacy policies. There's a provision about geolocating data, collecting it or actually using it. There's a provision about you have to inform the kids if they're being tracked, even by their parents, which I don't know. And then you have to enforce your own policy. Now, that's going to be a tough one because if it's a content moderation policy, It's choice. It's not something the government can do. But where it goes is to the district court to look at all of these provisions separately and to see how they affect not just big social media companies, but everybody who's regulated, even small websites, and to decide whether the applications are mostly constitutional.
Professor Jacobs, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Leslie Gilo Jacobs is the Anthony Kennedy Professor of Law at the McGeorge School of Law. We've been discussing the latest court ruling on California's 2022 social media law. And again, for transparency, the McGeorge School of Law is a financial supporter of CAP Radio. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.